your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. Now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Hey, Merry Meet everybody, and welcome to Stirring the Cauldron here on Para-X. And I'm really excited about tonight's show because we're going to be talking about poltergeists with my guest, Lloyd Auerbach. And right at the end of the show, Reverend Tim Shaw will be joining us to give us a sneak peek at our new venture, the Rev and Witch Show, which will debut next Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern. So we've got a lot to do tonight, and I think we should get going. Now, by way of introduction, and he really doesn't need one, but I'm just going to do it anyway, Lloyd Auerbach is a professor of parapsychology and a prominent field investigator in psychic phenomenon. He's the director of the Office of Paranormal Investigations. He's made many appearances on paranormal-related programs for the Discovery Channel, the Travel Channel, TLC, A&E, History, Sci-Fi. He's visited with David Letterman on Late Night and also with the ladies on The View. And he's the author of several books on paranormal, including Hauntings and Poltergeists. And I thought kind of tonight would be a good time that some of the many misconceptions about poltergeists and poltergeist activity were cleared up. So when in doubt, I always ask the expert. And Lloyd, long time no see, and welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Marla.
I've always found the subject of poltergeist kind of fascinating, and but the thing is that a lot of people have misconceptions or their own ideas about what a poltergeist is. And, you know, we all know that the term poltergeist literally means noisy ghost, but here to me is where things get kind of fuzzy, because some people believe that a poltergeist is a grumbly ghost who throws dishes across the room or whizzes a knife past somebody's head. And those that watch the poltergeist movies are more prone to believe that poltergeists are rather demonic in nature, perhaps. Right. And they like to terrorize children and suck them into TV sets. But my point here is that more often than not, people always go back to the noisy ghost definition or ghost period and consider this to kind of be totally paranormal, completely discounting the PK factor, which we'll get into shortly. But, you know, when you and I were talking the other day, you know, I said, well, I better go do some research on poltergeists. And you kind of suggested that the kind of research I do is kind of like the misconceptions or the myths.
Right, right.
And I came up with a bunch. So I'll kind of talk about them a little bit, and you can just fill in the blanks, because some of them are actually pretty funny. All right.
I'm sure they are.
All right. The first one is that poltergeists are famous for their uncanny ability to possess the body or a mortal or immortal.
Wow. Where'd you get that one from?
I'm good. I Google really well.
That's one I've never heard before. And of course, there's, you might say that the possession is from within, because what as we get more and more into this, we have come to know poltergeist as a situation involving a living agent. So it is perhaps one way to say it would be that the unconscious mind possesses some part of the psychic ability of the agent and does something.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never heard of any of poltergeist use to cover possessing spirits in that sense.
All right. Myth number two. Poltergeists themselves can be captured on camera or film.
Poltergeist phenomena can be captured on film, certainly, as long as you point the camera in the right direction. One of the qualities of poltergeist cases is that physical objects actually move. So a book flies off the shelf, a glass shatters. These are things that anyone present looking in the correct direction will, in fact, see, because they are physical things happening in the physical environment. Mm-hmm. So, yes, you can capture that. But to capture the actual poltergeist, well, you might say yes. Again, if we're back to the living agent, if Bobby is the one doing the poltergeistery, if he's the one behind it, then, yeah, you can capture him on camera, because he's not dead.
All right. Now, that brought up a question that I wasn't thinking about, and we'll get to myths in a second. But lots of times on investigations, people do capture activity. A chair will rock or something like that. Now, how does one distinguish the difference between that as in paranormal or that as in poltergeist activity?
Well, let me ask you, what's your differential between paranormal and poltergeist? Because wouldn't poltergeist phenomena be considered paranormal?
Okay, let me rephrase that question. You're good, Lloyd. The difference between it being a spirit and poltergeist activity.
Well, whether it is a discarnate entity, someone who's kind of hanging around without a body anymore, or whether it is a living person consciously or unconsciously moving the object, either way, by definition, it is mind over matter. So it is psychokinesis either way. The question is, who done it? I mean, this is where we really get right down to it. You have to play detective and figure out, A, if there's any other indication that there is a spirit present or some other entity present, or B, if this relates directly to a living person in the environment. I think that if you bring in a team to a place that has had physical object movement and the people who are living there are not there, if they're not there and things still move, that would be more of an indication that you're dealing with someone outside the family, outside the living group. Although it's not unheard of for someone to be in another room and for their poltergeist activity to actually slip away into another room. It's just unusual for that to happen. But we always look for alternative, for additional support. I mean, you always have to look at corroboration and other things. So if there's no other indication that it's a ghost, then you really have a real difficult process in determining what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Before we go on to the next myth, I want to invite anybody in the chat room, anybody that's listening, to address any questions to Lloyd. You can either, probably the easiest way is to send me a private message. I'm not sure if we have phone capability tonight or not, and Tim can answer that when he gets a chance. But any questions for Lloyd, any comments, lay them on us, okay? All right. Okay. Conception, misconception, myth number three. Poltergeists can be seen as orbs or blobs.
Again, because we're dealing with, let's stop for a moment and talk about where we are with poltergeists in general.
Okay,
in
good.
Science. First of all, the term poltergeist was coined, as far as any historians can tell in our field, it seems to go back at least to the 16th century in Germany. And it's just simply a term, noisy ghost. We had a differential. You have a ghost that's appearing, it's an apparition that's either communicating or scaring people, versus physical things that are making lots of noise and breaking and raps on the wall. So the original poltergeist cases, and they've evolved over the years, they've kind of different phenomena happens, but they involved rappings and sounds and such on the wall. So there was actually a noisy component. There still is to some extent. Mm-hmm. So this was just simply a label. It was not a definition, it was not a term of art, it was a label applied to a particular situation where they assumed there was a ghost there, because who else could possibly move these objects but a ghost?
Right.
All right, so that was an assumption. Mm-hmm. That's like assuming that disease is caused by demons.
Mm-hmm.
That's like assuming that lightning, because you go back to its origins of that term, or go back to what the phenomena was first seen as the electricity of the gods. Nobody knew it was electricity, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
It was something from the gods.
Right.
So we have words that evolve over time. I mean, just the word dope. Let's take that word for a moment.
Okay.
That means something very different.
Mm-hmm.
Every decade, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you're referring to Dopey from the Seven Dwarfs, calling somebody dope means something very different.
Right.
And it's different now than it was 10 years ago, for that matter. Right, so words have different meanings that change. In parapsychology and psychical research, as they started looking at poltergeist cases, and it was even before the field evolved, before the field even started, there were researchers, investigators looking at these cases that were very different than the cases involving ghosts and hauntings and such, because it didn't have any of the other earmarks. It was just physical stuff moving around.
Mm-hmm.
And as the researchers got into it, especially in the early 20th century, it became very clear that there was a living person component to this process, and it wasn't a medium and it wasn't a psychic, it was just a regular person who was involved and was a kind of the center of the poltergeist storm, you might say.
mm-hmm.
and looking more and more into that, and then trying things scientifically. In other words, testing hypotheses. They found that by working with that person, there were common factors for that person, mainly around stress.
Mm-hmm.
And dealing with the stress of that person stopped the poltergeist phenomena.
Okay, that kind of belays the myth that all poltergeist or PK activity, and we need to talk about that.
Are still talking about poltergeist activity as being PK, but it's PK from a living person's unconscious mind. And it's PK from a living person's unconscious mind. Think of it as a psychokinetic temper tantrum.
Uh-huh.
It's a way for a person to blow off steam
mm-hmm.
without actually physically blowing off steam. And what's really mm-hmm. interesting is the typical poltergeist agents are not people who are very athletic. They're not people who have other ways to blow off steam in
mm-hmm.
their stress. And there have been studies of groups of poltergeist agents which indicate that approximately 30% of at least one set of poltergeist agents, about 100 poltergeist agents, 30% had either epilepsy or epileptiform activity in their brain, which would suggest that in some poltergeist cases, we're talking about this being kind of a seizure.
Mm. Because, you know, I mean, the myth, too, is that it's only prepubescent girls, you know, that can do that.
That actually comes from, it wasn't prepubescent, it was pubescent girls. It was
teenagers. Okay, okay. All right.
And the myth actually comes from Stephen King.
Really?
The stereotype became popular with Stephen King. The reality is, if you look at the numbers, and my colleagues have looked at the numbers, 60% of poltergeist cases involve agents that are between the ages of 12 and 25 or 26. That's adolescents. That
mm-hmm.
includes the teenage years, but it also, and it does involve a lot of body changes and psychological issues and things, which add the stress in there. So you might
mm-hmm.
say that the teenagers are the kind of central focus, but they're not the majority, necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, in terms of male versus female, there are two schools of thought here. One, first of all, the percentage of female over male is barely a little more than the actual population statistic of males
mm-hmm.
versus females.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also thought that because males have, boys have more of a physical, an opportunity to do sports and things like that to let off steam, and it's more
right.
culturally accepted for boys to get in fights and blow off steam.
Uh-huh.
That may be why there are more females also than males.
Wow. We've got a comment from Don Shy, who, by the way, said to say hello to you.
Hi, Don.
She said, so instead of an out-of-body experience, this would be an emotion out-of-body experience.
That's a good way of putting it. That's a really nice way of putting it. It's the emotional outburst that the kid might otherwise have, the person might otherwise have.
Mm-hmm.
I like to say that a poltergeist incident is much more preferable to things that we've seen other kids do in schools lately, such as picking up guns and shooting their friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
exactly.
It may be an expression of the same kind of thing, same kind of stress.
Yeah. Okay. Now, there's one myth that I totally take exception to about poltergeist, and that is that a common form of poltergeist is a living poltergeist, which was created by an evil witch who performed a spell that makes them able to live for the amount of lives that their true lucky number is. How do you like that one?
Wow. That's a thought form conjured up in some homunculus conjured up in some sort of spell.
And always an evil witch. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm taking exception to that one.
Maybe an evil substitute a B for the W, maybe that, but not.
Very good point. And they also say that poltergeists can come in many forms, including anamorphic animals.
Yeah, well, that's not a poltergeist. So
there you go.
I mean, the thing is that you can take a word and apply it to anything you want. And in fantasy fiction and science fiction, people often do. I think that in the movie Poltergeist, it starts out looking like a poltergeist case, but it very clearly is not a poltergeist case, especially since we're dealing with some creature from another dimension that has
uh-huh.
nothing to do with poltergeist cases at all. But, you know, that actually started its own myth about poltergeist, for that matter.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. And this one, I think, is a pretty fairly common myth. That poltergeists are often poor souls who die in a terrible rage at the time of their death.
Yeah, if that's the case, they're not very good at what they do. it's the idea is to say that they're the reason why poltergeist activity is messy and throwing things around. It's for rage. Nobody gets hurt in poltergeist cases. One of the earmarks of poltergeist cases that's really interesting is, well, let me back up. Nobody gets hurt by other people. The agent's abilities or the agent's things, the things that happen, don't really hurt other people, but it can be directed at themselves and often is directed at themselves. And I have a couple of examples of that. Yeah. I think that most people, anyone who's gotten hurt in a poltergeist case, it's because they simply duck into the path of a flying object, which is, you know, one of my rules, never duck into the path of a flying object.
Yeah, well, we're led to believe that the flying objects come at people, you know, the knife whizzing through the head, the plate flying across the room, the ashtray, you know.
It's not the case. There have been cases for a time, for whatever reason, there were poltergeist cases or seeming poltergeist cases where rocks would fall from nowhere and hit houses and sometimes break things, but nobody got hit. Mm-hmm. And in typical poltergeist cases, even the worst of them where things are flying around, nobody gets hurt. Now, that said, you also have poltergeist cases where the TV channels start flipping all by themselves, and, you know, the person trying to watch a TV program may feel like they're being hurt because they don't get to watch their program. That's a different kind of hurt altogether.
Yeah, yeah. An emotional pain, yes.
That's an emotional pain. That's a,
very
that's
dramatic.
I felt that recently because our cable had gone out a bunch of times, so I felt that.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, huh?
But there are cases, there are cases where people's psychology literally directs the whatever the PK activity is at themselves. I mean, there can also be some physical things happening around them. But I had, for example, had a case where a woman was being choked. She would literally have finger depressions on her throat, and she got bruises on her throat, and she had an attack in front of us. Mm-hmm. But as we, myself and my colleague Sharon Frankmont, got into the case, and it was really interesting because she was about to tell us about or talk about her father molesting her as a child, which is something that had just started up. Her memories of that experience, that horrible experience as a child, had just come back. Something had triggered that memory. And she was actually seeing a therapist for nightmares happening. And the first attack actually happened around the time of the first nightmare, and just right after the memories came out. And it was right around the time that she first started talking to the therapist. So her own guilt about this, which is not uncommon with people who are molested, by family members especially, her own guilt about talking about this was basically key trying to shut her up. Wow. And we were able to work through that pretty quickly, understanding that piece of it. The therapist was able to work it from her end, and we were able to work it from our end because we understood the tie between the two. No attacks after that.
Wow. And it is amazing,
I was going to say, one of the ways we actually seem to know that we're on the right track and have been for years, and this is not my theory. People kind of attribute this to me sometimes. This goes back, really, William Roll is probably the guy who, in the 60s, who really pulled a lot of this information together. But before him was Nandor Fodor and other folks. Since Roll, there was also Scott Rogo and a number of other researchers as well. And it's interesting, kind of the proof is in the pudding. We can stop these cases by working with the individuals and get the stress to go away. The phenomena stops. And if this was an angry ghost, I can't imagine an angry ghost being pissed off at the world because a parapsychologist comes in and says, "You're stressed. Stop being stressed." It stops the attacks. I mean, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. And, I, you know, as you're talking, I'm just... It always fascinates me how people can manifest physical things on themselves just by thought, you know, it's really scary.
We do it all the time, and I think the mainstream world has accepted that we have psychosomatic illnesses. Mm-hmm. These are physical ailments caused by stress and other psychological beliefs. I mean, people can get ulcers because of because of this. People actually, you can hypnotize people who are very suggestible. If they're hypnotized and told that a pencil is red hot, if you touch them with a pencil, they'll have a blister.
That's
a perfect example of the same kind of effect.
Yeah, it's amazing, and I don't think people can don't realize that they necessarily do that to themselves sometimes in different degrees. You know, it doesn't all have to be so serious, but even minor things pop up like that, and, you know, who do you blame? Yourself. But it's hard to do that. All right, now...
Well, we don't want to take responsibility for anything, let's face it.
Well, it's true. It's always easier to pass the buck and blame somebody else.
We're not responsible for anything we do.
All right. Now, another thing that came up in my Googling was that the Bell Witch story was a perfect example of bad spirit poltergeist activity. I'm using their words, not mine. I've heard so many different versions of the Bell Witch, you know, that it wasn't a witch, it was a spirit, it was this and that. What's your opinion of it?
Well, first, let me say that if you have a situation with an actual ghost, an apparition, and the apparition's moving things around, whether it's playfully or throwing things at people, either way, we would not label that a poltergeist. We would label that an apparition case with the apparition using PK. That's just one element of the case. I've had a case, a place called the Banta Inn, which is a restaurant in the town of Tracy, California. A lot of physical activity over the years from the ghosts there. Never malicious, playful, sometimes insulting to some of the people he's trying to get out of the place. He was the old bartender of the place. But that's apparitional PK. That's not a poltergeist case. Because, again, poltergeist fits this particular... It's come to mean something very different than just simply noisy ghost. And, in fact, I wouldn't call it noisy ghost anyway because he's not very noisy. He moves things, so he's not noisy. So the Bell Witch case is difficult because, you know, we have descriptions from different people, and it could be fit into the poltergeist thing or it could be fit into an apparitional PK piece. It's hard to say because it's so long after the situation.
And then it's, you know, whether you read a book about it or if you saw the movie, you know, Hollywood jumped in and...
Well, I would say you can't base any opinion on that film or any film for that matter.
Yeah, pretty much so. Well, I think, you know, we've talked about PK. Now, I think this might be a really good time to define what PK is exactly.
Sure. The term means psychokinesis means mind over matter. Well, motion, kinesis is motion, movement by the mind. That's the psycho part. The previous term, a term that's actually subsumed within that, is telekinesis, which is movement at a distance. Telepathy means feeling at a distance. And telepathy has come to mean something very different than what it actually means. Because we talk about, you know, verbal stuff would technically not be telepathy. So words have different meanings. They change their meanings. Psychokinesis is a label covering a group of phenomena, a group of abilities and activity having to do with a mental or conscious or unconscious mental influence on matter and energy. We often call it mind-matter interaction these days. So it's the idea that a mind can move things, yes, can heal, whether it's yourself or someone else, can affect biological systems, in other words, can bend metal with its bare mind, can possibly transport or teleport things, levitate things. I mean, all the things that are covered in telekinesis would also be covered in psychokinesis, but you then throw in things like manipulating electricity, manipulating energy, manipulating technology, affecting things from a healing or detrimental perspective. All that stuff is part of the psychokinesis or PK element or label. That's separate from ESP, which covers things like telepathy and clairvoyance and precognition. But again, because the model and the definition of this is that a mind affects things, and, you know, if you got a ghost, you got a mind affecting things too, and that's still PK.
Now, I was also reading that there is kind of sometimes a cross-haunting. I don't want to say cross-contamination, but, you know, a spirit who is capable of moving things around in a haunting where there is also somebody who is able to manipulate things by themselves.
Well, we've had cases. I had a really interesting case 3 years ago. I like to call these mixed bag cases because it's not like there's one specific even psychic or paranormal explanation. We had a case a few years ago where this family moved into a house and this apparition appeared to the family. And he was trying to tell them so clearly, but he was very visual. They could see him. They could all see him. He was talking and talking and talking, and they couldn't get anything. They didn't hear anything, which freaked them out a little bit and apparently freaked out the ghost because he looked like he was getting angry. This is a case where we did have a teenage girl in the house, and she was already having problems at school and some other stresses, and apparently the fear of the ghost put things over the edge, because all of a sudden, after a couple of weeks of living in this house, with this ghost appearing, trying to get a message across, things started moving around. and breaking and falling and such. And it was really all around the girl. Things happened around her, and it was stuff related to her and what was going on with her. So when we did the investigation, I brought in a psychic, and we walked in, and it was really interesting because the psychic immediately picked up on the ghost, the apparition, and I see her talking. You know, she's talking to nobody over there, and I said to the family, "Do you see anything?" And they apparently saw the apparition there, too. I didn't see anything. And she's having a conversation. She's able to hear the ghost, and she starts laughing. And one of the family members says, "Why is the ghost pointing at our daughter? And why does the guy look so angry and upset?" And the psychic says, "Because you're blaming him for what she's doing." Apparently, she became, her psychokinetic abilities and became activated because of the fear and stress from seeing the ghost. So the ghost was the cause of the poltergeist phenomena, but he was not the source. He was not the source of the poltergeist phenomena.
And didn't want to be blamed for it. Good guy.
He was getting very upset. He was being blamed for everything,
No, I can totally understand that.
So the psychic actually worked through what he needed. We worked through the whole situation, the family, everything stopped. Everything, he went away, everything stopped. It was all fine.
So what are some of the various typical forms of poltergeist activity? And really, how common is it, I mean, in the vast scale?
Well, first, I would say that what I like to call mini poltergeist activity or mini poltergeist phenomena happens on a fairly regular basis to all of us.
Really?
This is where our studies in parapsychology really come in from the laboratory. One of the things that's developed over the last probably 30 years in poltergeist cases is an emphasis or attack, you might say, on technology. Appliances and other technology and other devices, just computers and other things, just going haywire. Crashing, turning on when they were not plugged in, things like that. And it usually has to happen, you know, usually happens. In a poltergeist case, there's a lot of activity because there's a lot of stress. But we all go through those periods where we're a little stressed out. And something happens around us. I mean, when I do college lectures, I like to kind of bring up, you know, you're under a deadline for doing a paper. You're an hour before class. You haven't finished yet. And what happens? Your computer crashes. Your printer doesn't work. Things start really going haywire. And by the way, there are studies about this, laboratory studies that show that this kind of stress and also how people react to computers can cause computers and other technology to crash. Sometimes even crash and burn. And most people in the audience would raise their hands because that is what's going on. Now, of course, there are alternate explanations you have to look at first. One being, if you're stressed out, you may be hitting the wrong keys. That's stressed out. Number two, it could be psychokinesis. And number three, for a lot of people, it's Windows. So, I mean, that's always possibly an explanation for things. So just sometimes Windows acts weird. I can't really say why. But this happens with people use Macs also, and it happens with pretty rigid systems.
Oh, never with a Mac, Lloyd. Come on, never.
Yeah, sorry. I had somebody actually crash a Mac and burn out the hard drive. So
they must have been good.
Yeah, the Apple people pretty much gave me a new hard drive because they couldn't. It was out of warranty. They couldn't figure out how that happened.
Wow.
And by the way, I've talked to many people in the computer industry over the years, and they're aware. A lot of the people in software, the help desks, are often aware of the mood of the operator affecting the stresses affecting the devices and the programming.
Really?
They're aware of that. Yeah. Military is aware of it because there's been research for the military on human-machine interaction. But this is all an expression of PK on an unconscious level for people, and when you really get really stressed out, a lot of stuff happens, and that's what's happening today. I mean, we still have physical objects moving, and it could, you know, it is books falling down, it's cabinet doors opening and closing, it's things breaking. A lot of times, it's the things sometimes we'd like to do if we could really let loose. You know, I like sometimes you get pent up aggression, pent up anger at something, and you just want to hit something or break something. And that's what we're talking about here. Now, I should tell you that in the early days, some of the earliest experiences reported in poltergeistry, very often, you know, things would move, things would fly, there'd be bangings on the wall. Again, people hitting the wall. Think of it as somebody physically actually doing this, and this all makes sense. One of the things that would often happen is a chamber pot would be thrown across the room, sometimes full.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's... For me, thank goodness we have toilets. That's all I can say.
Yeah, it's harder to throw those across the room.
Yeah, I just wonder if they were looking under the fan, if that's where that expression came from.
You're right. Hey. Like that. But yeah, it's go ahead. It's just fascinating.
It's evolved. It changes. It's based on what's around us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you also do, you tend to have, I had a case where what was being thrown around and broken were things that was the guy stuff, the husband stuff in the marriage. And mm-hmm. it first looked like it was the wife who was so stressed out and she was breaking his stuff, but it really turned out to be his stresses on trying to find his find a job, and he was just like lashing out at whatever he could, and he didn't want to lash out at his wife's stuff, so he broke his own stuff mentally.
Well, that was really nice of him.
Yeah.
I think I'd probably go after somebody else's. Yeah, I mean, it's always easier because then you don't have to replace your own stuff.
Right, right.
Makes it so much easier. We've got a couple of questions coming in, but what we're going to do right now, guys, is take a quick break, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes with Lloyd Auerbach, and the topic is poltergeist, so get your questions, send them in, and we'll be right back.
Hey, gang, Stirring the Cauldron. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
Paranormal Radio, the Kentucky Area Paranormal Society, sharing their years of experience investigating the unknown. CAPS Paranormal Radio, honored by the paranormal community for excellence in paranormal broadcasting. CAPS Paranormal Radio, hosted by Dave and Tom, presented by Para X every Sunday from 8 p.m. until midnight, right here on the CBS Radio Network.
Can you find new age supplies, unique gifts, and great prices? At Mimosa Books and Gifts, we feature affordable, quality products for enhancing your spiritual awareness. Mimosa's online shop, www.mimosaspirit.com, offers incense, deity statues, books, music, yoga and meditation supplies, and so much more. You can also visit our cozy store in downtown Madison, Wisconsin, at the corner of State and Gilman Streets. Check our website often for new products and special offers at www.mimosaspirit.com. Can't find what you need online? Call Mimosa Books and Gifts at 608-256-5432. Again, that's 608-256-5432. Mimosa Books and Gifts, your spiritual resource center.
This fall from Schiffer Books. From the author of the Ghost of Hollywood series and Workplace Spells comes a brand new book for all lovers of pets. Animal Spells and Magic by Marla Brooks. Learn how to choose your next pet according to their astrological sign. Explore animal superstitions. Learn 25 magic spells for your pets and get instructions on creating your own spells. Learn who to call upon and what to use to cast these spells. Includes special chapters by Reverend Tim Shaw, Psychic to the Stars Kenny Kingston, Psychic Medium Victoria Gross, Animal Communicator Dinah Roseberry, and Shaman Willie Windwalker Gibson. This is the perfect book for all animal lovers. Animal Spells and Magic by Marla Brooks. For details on how to get your copy of this amazing new book, go to www.schifferbooks.com or check out Marla Brooks online at www.marlabrooks.com. This would make the perfect gift for the animal lover in your life. Go to www.schifferbooks.com or ask about it at your local bookstore.
Hey, how about this? Music CDs that surround you in quantum fields of healing energy. That's right. It's called Super Quantum Tone Technology. And what it does is repattern the negative beliefs and trap subconscious energy that has been sabotaging your quality of life. It's a quick, easy, and inexpensive way to help change the things you want to change about your life. These music CDs can help you with relationship problems or prosperity and abundance. They can help you clear emotional issues or sharpen your mental clarity or get rid of stress, anxiety, and depression. They can even even help with degenerative diseases like cancer. There are so many to choose from, and all you have to do is press play. The benefits are remarkable, and they're pleasant to use. The healing energies are blended with music and nature sounds to create a vibrational medicine in the form of audio CDs. There are CDs for weight loss, stopping smoking, faster healing after surgery, deep sound sleep, stress relief, abandonment issues, and breaking free from addictions. Visit the website to listen to them and learn more at www.diamondcrystalmusic.com, where you will also find healing music solutions for hypertension, overwhelm, rejuvenation, longevity, loneliness, feelings of guilt, boosting your immune system, and much more. Visit www.diamondcrystalmusic.com. That's diamondcrystalmusic.com.
This is Dave from the Dave Matthews Band for Rad. When you go out and party, get drunk, then drive, you're not only loaded, you're a loaded weapon. When you celebrate, designate. Choose a designated driver. Remember, music lives and so should you.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
And welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Here's Marla Brooks.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. We're here with Lloyd Auerbach tonight, and we're talking about poltergeists. And, Lloyd, I've got a couple of questions from the chat room.
Okay.
So, first of all, another one from Dawn Shine. She said, what, if any, would be the most believable and amazing case of an actual poltergeist, in your opinion?
Most believable, I'm assuming, for the rest of the world.
yeah. Or maybe to you. Wait, it could be a trick question.
I've had many believable cases. That's kind of, I don't know what to say about that. That's kind of a hard one to answer. I think in terms of what would be believable for the rest of the world, you'd really actually need to capture all angles on video, literally from the start to finish of an investigation, and you'd have to capture the phenomena, but you have to capture it from all angles, because even then, people are going to say that a lot of it's faked. I mean, the problem with psychokinesis in general, with what we call macro PK, the stuff moving we can see, is that whether you're there in person or you're watching video, it looks unbelievable. I mean, it just looks like a magic trick. Because mm-hmm. it doesn't happen all the time, so it's really hard for people to get past their threshold of their minds boggling, what we call, like we call the boggle threshold. Mm-hmm. People have a hard time accepting that, and I don't know. I mean, believability is really based on the person's background, I think, more than anything else.
Well, I think I had a question that's similar to that, and Don just said, no, she meant for you, and my question,
Go ahead and ask your question, and I'll try to combine them, maybe.
Well, I think it's kind of close enough, but my question was, is there one case in particular, a poltergeist case, that either stands out in your mind or had you scratching your head? So, yeah, it's probably kind of the same
not question. Scratching my head. We've actually been, the thing about poltergeist cases that's very different than ghost cases is because you're dealing with living people, to me, first of all, poltergeist cases are very interesting to me on many levels, one of which is I occasionally read mysteries, and mm-hmm. I kind of love detective shows and stuff like that, so I get to play detective. I mean, really get to play detective. This is a whodunit. And interestingly enough, the person who's doing it may not even know they're doing it, which makes it a really interesting whodunit. I've been involved in, you know, investigating a number of poltergeist cases and seen things move around in those poltergeist cases. So there have been a whole bunch of them. I think the one that stands out is the woman who was choked in front of us. That was a really interesting case. On many levels, not good for her. Had another case where I didn't witness the phenomena per se, but I witnessed the aftermath, and I also spoke to some very, very good witnesses, including somebody from our local utilities company who witnessed what was going on. It was a kid who was causing water bursts to happen in the house.
Wow.
And in a family, the family basically, and honestly, the couple who, the parents of this kid, were very open to psychic phenomena, but they also were very, very careful. They really, and the guy looked for every possible explanation first before jumping to any conclusion that this was paranormal. You know, I went through the house, checked the pipes, did look for condensation, brought in somebody from local utilities for that very thing, and that's when someone else witnessed it, and there were actually a whole bunch of folks. In fact, when they called me from a neighbor's house, they happened to be over having dinner, I started hearing some popping sounds in the background, and the guy on the phone turns around and said, David, stop. Because apparently at the neighbor's house, it had just happened as well. And these were bursts of water happening right below the ceiling. It actually caused water damage in the people's home. We had a number of witnesses to this. Clearly, he could not have done what he couldn't have faked it. And so we went through a whole bunch of things. It was a very believable case. And, most importantly, it was connected specifically to something going on in his life, which was the kid didn't like to be competitive. He was 12. Didn't like competition from his extracurricular activities. He'd been doing martial arts. His martial arts instructor started putting him into competitions. He didn't want to do that, so he quit. So his parents pushed him, since he liked to swim, pushed him towards the swim team. And he had a hard time. He didn't vocalize or verbalize it. It was the competition, not the actual activity he had a problem with. So shortly after he joined the swim team, was forced onto the swim team by his parents for activity, the water burst happened.
Wow.
So we actually got him into another martial arts school not far from him, where I knew the instructor, and they almost never competed. They were just one of those schools where they were more interested in chi and the history and the philosophy and actually the practice rather than actually hitting people.
Mm.
And no more attacks. Nothing happened again.
Wow. Got another question from Ceiling Cat in the chat room, and she wants to know if there is any hard data to correlate with a poltergeist activity, EMF spikes, temperature fluctuations, that sort of thing?
No, and the reason being, because those are not symptoms of a poltergeist case. In fact, psychokinesis, the problem with PK seems to be that we don't have any fluctuations of EMF. We don't have, and unless you have a temperature drop reported or experienced, there's nothing to even measure. I mean, there's no temperature. So the hard data we have is actually eyewitness or occasionally you get a video clip here and there, but it's pretty rare. Mm-hmm. But it seems that because of the nature of poltergeist phenomena, it often happens right behind the camera or right to the side. So that's why I say you really would need to have cameras pointed in all directions. And so far we haven't been able to have a setup like that in a poltergeist case. But multiple witnesses, definitely. We've had that.
Right. So do you think the word poltergeist in itself is kind of like a misnomer now? I mean, shouldn't maybe this activity be renamed?
Well, it has been renamed. It's just people don't like the term.
they probably can't spell it or pronounce it yet.
Well, its initials, it's pretty easy to spell. But
you're right.
Back in the 60s, William Roll came up, basically said that a poltergeist is recurrent, spontaneous. Mm-hmm. So it's recurrent. It happens again and again. Spontaneous because it's not under direct conscious control. It's under an unconscious control, psychokinesis, or RSPK.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about RSPK as that's what a poltergeist is. The problem is that people know the word poltergeist, just like the word ghost has many meanings in many cultures,
right,
both good and bad, and people still use the word ghost. We tend to use the word apparition as much as possible within the field to try to make it a little cleaner, but again, we're trying to use terms that people understand or can appreciate. The thing is that, again, if you look at the direct meaning of a word or the translation, we're not even talking about the meaning of the word. The meaning of the word in parapsychology, which, by the way, is the field of study that looks at these things, the science. Mm-hmm. So anyone who's saying that poltergeists are noisy ghosts and claim to be scientific, they know nothing about the science of parapsychology if that's their position. So it's a label. It's a word that has come to mean something else, like so many other words in the English and other languages as well. Words evolve.
The word atom
doesn't mean the same thing that it did when the Greeks, coined it. So.
Right. Well, I think, most people know the term parapsychology, but there are just a very few of you that study it. I mean, I was joking. Kieran O'Keefe was my guest last week, and it just occurred to me, and listening to you as well, that I joked with him that I would not be in his head for any amount of money, because there is just so much good stuff going on in there that I would get lost forever. It's a difficult field. There's so many different aspects to it. You have the skeptical mind, but at the same time, you also have there's so much reason, so much, you know, weighing of the scales, you know, and mm-hmm. picking things apart. I don't know how you guys do it, really.
Like any other person who's involved in any mystery or science, I think, I sometimes wonder the same thing about some of the folks who are in quantum physics, because I don't get the math, so...
No, that scares me even worse. Yeah, I'm not good at math at all. But it's just, you know, the whole thing about the Poltergeist thing. I mean, why do you think they? I mean, this is just speculation. But the movie Poltergeist. Why do you think they called it that, and then, you know, made
drama.
The? Yeah. Okay.
It was for drama.
Find it. Yeah.
What are they going to call it? The Beast from Another Dimension.
Well. Yeah. In the 50s, that probably would have played out really well.
Yeah,
for
it would, have, yeah, it would not have flown in the early 80s. It just wouldn't.
No.
I mean, you already had the movie The Entity, which came out, which was the Poltergeist case, by the way.
Yes.
That, talk about a movie that shifted very dramatically from the reality, the real case. That's a mm-hmm. huge shift from the real case that Cary Gaynor and Barry Taft did. The author changed it, you know, expanded on it, and then the movie... put in a sexual element and some crazy, crazy element about the UCLA parapsychology lab barring the gymnasium at UCLA and trying to freeze the entity with liquid nitrogen, which when I was watching this movie, thinking, does anybody accept this? I mean, it's like, how can anybody believe that a college is going to let a bunch of parapsychologists try to destroy a gymnasium?
Uh-huh.
You know, sports are the biggest thing. I mean, that's crazy. That was the most, I mean, of all the unbelievable things in that movie, that was the most unbelievable to me. So when Poltergeist, I think that they were probably, he was just probably testing a whole bunch of different titles, and Poltergeist was a good one in that instance.
And because, you know, playing on people's, I don't want to say lack of education about this stuff, but, you know, the misconceptions, exactly.
Sure.
All right, got another question from the chat room from Reverend Tim Shaw, and he wants to know that when working a demonic case or with a parasitical – oh, my God, my thing jumped. Hang on. Or with a parasitical entity, is there normally poltergeist activity that accompanies it?
Well, that's hard for me to say because we don't come at cases at all from a demonic perspective. There's no demons as far as – the field of parapsychology is concerned, other than
right.
the demons we have within ourselves. When you talk about parasitic entities, you know, that's a little hard term to talk about because, let's face it, there are parasitic people. There are people that seem to be kind of psychic vampires that kind of suck the life out of people.
Yes.
And there are a lot of ghosts out there, and not that there are a lot of ghosts in general, but there are ghosts out there that or deceased entities who probably still carry with them some of their neuroses and psychological issues from life and are hangers-on. You know, they glom onto somebody. And they often glom onto somebody with similar personality traits. That would be what a dybbuk is in Jewish tradition, in fact.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So
I like dybbuks, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, dybbuks
I like
are,
the word.
Yeah, Woody Allen would be a great dybbuk, I think, when you
say Yes. That's a great definition of that.
Yeah. So you really have, we try to get away from the whole, from the religious aspect, because science can't deal with religion the same way. It just doesn't work that way. There are harmful things potentially out there, which is different than saying demonic. And I really have to say people need to shy away from using, as soon as you use the word demon, if you're in a religion, that's one thing. But if you're trying to be scientific or claim to be trying to be scientific, you have to shy away from that. And saying something is harmful is very, very different than saying something is demonic in the way the perceptions of people are. And it's you can scare the hell out of somebody, no pun intended, when you say you have a demonic entity versus you have a harmful entity.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, well, and these days everybody is seeing demons under every table and around every corner and blaming everything on demonics rather than, you know, a disgruntled spirit who's probably, you know, just... ticked off or something, you know. So
yeah, I
mean,
I just did a telephone seminar on Monday night talking about possession, and that was one of the questions that came up as well. And I'll just put in a plug for my classes. I do distance learning classes in parapsychology, and have some additional low cost telephone seminars which I'm doing from time to time. So if folks want to know about them, they can go to my Facebook page or my MySpace page. Just look me up there, or go to profparanormal@gmail.com and send me an email. I'll put you on the list for that as well.
I think you're psychic, because I was going to bring that up, but go ahead.
So that's the question. If you have an intentional entity, I want to say that poltergeist activity is the little kid throwing stuff around. That's poltergeist activity. It is someone moving things. What's really interesting, however, is that in apparition cases where there's physical object movement, you rarely ever have the destruction you have, the chaos you have in a poltergeist case. Because poltergeist cases come from the unconscious, which is and from a stress point, which is pure chaos, whereas apparitions have intention, typically, and that tends to be less about breaking stuff as getting people's attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we're going to probably run out of time really quickly here, but I do want you, I know you're doing the teleseminars. What else is going on in your busy life? Where can people find you and all that good stuff?
My main website is mindreader.com, which I've got to update it in the next couple of weeks to list the teleseminars we have recorded and available as MP3 downloads. So that'll happen in the next couple of weeks. And then I'll have some of my classes scheduled. For those folks in Northern California, we do local classes in parapsychology here. But all of my classes, which are through HCH Institute, are available in distance learning. And there's it's a non-academic certificate program with a series of courses, which people can do distance learning. And the way they work distance learning is courses are recorded, audio. There is some video, and there's a lot of text. And then every single course, people get phone time, individual phone time with me, because I feel it's really important to treat the distance students somewhat like my local students and to try to have interaction with them as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing better than having a phone conversation with somebody.
Exactly.
Works a lot better than email, in fact. So those are those courses. And the courses are available individually, or they're available as a full program, and you can find out about that through mindreader.com as well. There's a link to the Parapsychological Studies program there.
Very good.
Got a new book coming out in April with Annette Martin, a psychic I work with, dealing with hauntings.
Oh, I love Annette.
Yeah, so we've got a book coming out on hauntings in San Francisco. Transcripts of her communication sometimes with some of the ghosts, and it's kind of a fun book. It's the first in a series. And it'll be called Have Ghosts Wheel Travel, San Francisco.
I love it. Annette, I've had Annette on my show a couple of times, and she's just great.
Yeah, she is. Yeah.
She is. All right, I got one final question from the chat room from Ceiling Cat. And she would like to know if you have any new chocolate recipes.
I do. In fact, sometime in the next month, I will be selling chocolate.
Really?
My first product, my first chocolate. Some people out there know that I've heard other podcasts. I I took a course in becoming a professional chocolatier, and I'm starting to produce some chocolates. First pro chocolates I'm producing have little ghosties on them, so they're ghost drops.
Oh, how
and
cute.
Then I'm also doing, I'll be doing a special set of chocolates that have special symbols on them, and they're used for readings. You can actually do readings with chocolate.
Like runes or something?
They're more modern runes kind of thing, but eating the chocolate's very much a part of the reading process. So this is a new method I've come up with, and new process, and good chocolate. So I'll be launching that no later than October 1st.
And where will people be able to find it then?
Hauntedbychocolate.com.
See, now, if she hadn't asked that question, you weren't going to mention that, and that's very important,
true,
Lloyd.
Yeah, which is crazy because I just made some chocolate today, so I was making some ghost drops today.
I like ghost drops. I like the whole concept of it. Well, this is so cool because, I mean, you do so many things. You know, you're not like a one-trick pony. I mean, you know, you're into all this stuff, and how can anybody, you know, not be into chocolate?
Well, there are some people. They're crazy, but there are some people. Well, you know, unless they're allergic, I kind of give it to the people who are allergic.
All right. Well, I'm glad you do that, because chocolate is just – and now the whole – Karen in the chat room wants to know if you send out samples.
not at this point in time.
When you start raking in
– If I ever get into huge production, then we'll talk about it.
Yeah, you just, you know, then you'll start sending out little ghost drops to people, and that will all be good. Right. But everybody, you know, in case you don't know, Lloyd is Mr. Chocolate. I mean, he knows it, he eats it, he makes it, he writes about it. I mean, you know, this is really a good thing. And I'm so glad you were able to pop in tonight and talk to us about poltergeists and kind of set the record straight, and also talk about chocolate, because, you know, you just said that and I smiled. You know, I mean, it's, you know, I'm like Pavlov's dog. It's a scary thing.
It is the most craved substance on Earth by all studies.
Now, do you think it may be addicting, or is it mental addiction? Well, addiction.
There's been studies about that, and it's not physiologically addictive, and it's not even so much psychologically addictive, except that the feeling you get from chocolate can be very addictive. And the flavor is one that just happens to hit us just the right way. I mean, it's got some great stuff in it that affects our brain chemistry to a good degree. So there's definitely some positive benefits from a behavioral perspective, too, that probably, I wouldn't say it leads to addiction, but it certainly leads to cravings.
Okay, I'll pick your brain on one more thing, because I love chocolate, but I'm really bad with caffeine. Is there such a thing as a no-caffeine chocolate?
There's not. First of all, the caffeine in chocolate is very, very, very little. I mean, it's very little. Mm-hmm. I mean, a full bar of chocolate has significantly less caffeine than a cup of coffee. I mean, a lot. In fact, I kind of remember some study recently said that half a bar of chocolate has less than a cup of decaf, because decaf has some caffeine in it.
Right. Caffeine. Yeah.
But it's probably not the caffeine so much as the other stimulants. There's a stimulant called theobromine, which actually is a stimulant that is poison to dogs.
Right.
So that is a stimulant as well, and that can affect people too, you know, like caffeine sometimes, certain people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it does kind of affect me, and so I go really light on the chocolate, but
yeah.
I was just hoping that someday somebody will create it.
I was going to say, if you have really good chocolate, I mean, really good chocolate, you're going to go light on it anyway, because the flavor will be just be right. So.
I know. Mm. All right, you got me salivating. I'm going to let you go now, because that was totally not fair. but thank you so much, and, you know, you've got so many things going on with you. I'm going to call you to come back, and we'll talk about some of the other stuff down the line.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, you take care, and you too. Bye-bye, Lloyd.
Bye-bye.
This has been another edition of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Be sure to tune in next week at the same time for another great guest and more fun. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2009.
You have been listening to the Para-X Radio Network.